Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our Sweet Ops community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It is March 5th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We are a DevOps accelerator for AWS infrastructure that helps teams deploy their software faster. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with Terraform, just head over to cloudposse.com/meet, answer a few quick questions, and you'll book a meeting with me directly. I'll show you how we can make things work much better. So how can you maximize today's session? Well, first off, the format's very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like, ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, and you can join us by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours. So, with that said, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, you can go ahead and share it with your team. Just go to youtube.com/cloudposse. You'll find a recording of today's session there posted in a few hours. So let's get into the news. So, Terraform 1.11 came out recently. Let's see, was it a week ago already? Yeah, a week ago already. And one of the really exciting things from 1.11 was ephemerality built into VSL Terraform. So this is something that everyone had been clamoring for and asking for a long time and never happened. VSL licensed Terraform ended up addressing the problem in a slightly different way. They addressed it by, well, let's ensure that you can have encrypted state, which is still good. Remember, security is all about peeling back the layers of the onion or adding layers to that onion. And encrypted state is a good one. But you know what's even better? Have nothing sensitive in your state. So one of the nice things that they've done in 1.11 is create a new resource type. And when you create this resource type called ephemeral, you can set some keys in here and assign them values. Then you can refer to the ephemeral resource in other parts of your code like this, and rest assured that whatever you're referring to isn't persisted in the Terraform state itself. And that's all accomplished as a result of using this ephemeral resource type. Has anyone kicked the tires on this already or taken a look at it?
I've looked at it, but I haven't used it. It does seem pretty interesting though.
Yeah, does anyone know if there's a similar proposal in OpenTofu? I think this would be a popular one. Let's take a look at the release notes for 1.11 and see what else came out. So that's interesting that they added the ability to export the test in JUnit format. This means that it'll play nicely with all the tools in the JUnit ecosystem, including the many GitHub actions that will render JUnit test results as job summaries or GitHub comments. That's nice. Oh, that's mostly what jumps out at me. Anything? This was a big one, of course, that state locking is now native and no longer an experiment in the core, Terraform core. And
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Finish your
I
thought.
was going to say, and if you're using Atmos, Atmos works with this as well. Recently, somebody just posted a question in the SweetOps Slack channel asking how to use it, and someone else posted an example. So it's there's nothing needed custom in Atmos other than your configuration for how you use the back end needs to change. And Atmos doesn't get in the way of that. Matt?
I was just going to make two comments. One, the other thing that I thought was interesting, I think, is just slightly below that under enhancements
Yeah, oops, my dog, of course, barking. But now they respect the .NET RC. It's the first one under
Oh.
enhancements when you do Terraform init. So you can now have modules or providers behind something that needs credentials, because you can actually get credentials from NetRC, which I think is a pretty interesting one. But then just on a more general thought, like, I think we've finally reached that point where you need to pick, like, are you going to use Terraform going forward or OpenTofu going forward? Because they've really started to diverge in a lot of functionality and how things are implemented, at this point. So they're no longer, like, I don't think Tofu is like a direct drop-in replacement for Terraform anymore at these versions, so it's an interesting point that we reached. I think if you go back and look at our conversations when Tofu was first announced, we said this time was coming. I think we've gotten there pretty quickly.
And the time has also come where you can't just say, well, we're going to support the lowest common denominator, 1.5, which is over a year old now, and it's not a tenable response. So organizations now have to choose which way they want to go.
And not to mention that 157, sorry, I'll just add this, is now getting flagged for a bunch of CVEs. So if you're at all like security conscious, that's not really like a viable way forward either anymore. So anyway.
Can back on that, you're saying that the init now allows us to pass credentials outside of like environment variables. It's like it can just read that now. So
So
I can set.
let's introduce the NetRC so it'll make more sense.
Go ahead.
Well, so NetRC is a standard that's been around Linux for decade or more at this point, probably. And it's something that's supported by the underlying HTTP libraries that choose to implement support. To be entirely honest, I could have sworn it already supported it, so this was news to me that it didn't work. But like NetRC is a great way with other systems, like if you're doing Docker builds and those need authenticated pulls. Now there's a better way of doing that in Docker, but so that's a bad example. But with Git, I believe that's another way that you can do authenticated pulls from HTTP endpoints. What are some other examples?
And NPM, you can use that for
NPM
like
uses it.
private package repositories, etc.
So this is let's just say this is a standard, and I really like it when things just build on existing art and how things are done, and not implement something entirely custom. So I think this is a interesting thing that they did. So you can specify basically a machine, which is a host name endpoint, and what the basic auth is for using that endpoint. And it will automatically be injected in the requests to that upstream.
Yeah, 'cause like what we were coming to, and maybe it's a similar situation but not exact, is like I think with like Snowflake or Confluent Cloud or whatever other providers we were trying to implement into our Terraform workflows, and the massive amounts of change it required at our pipeline or workflow levels to support the provider authentication. Which I mean, we did, we just built it in, but we were like, why, it would make more sense if I could just point these providers to my secrets manager and it would pull in those values, with those API calls before, running or having to run init so that, we don't have to maintain an update like our automations that way. Every time we need to pull up a new provider and we have to update and I mean. But
I think you're conflating a couple of different concepts there, unfortunately. I think that like the NetRC solution will allow you to download Terraform modules and Terraform providers themselves that are protected by some sort of authentication, right? So like that's what this will allow you to do when you run Terraform init. Those calls to download those things will now be authenticated. So that's one. I think that the provider like configuration of like each provider needing its own way of authenticating, you know, some of them with environment variables, some of them with tokens, some of them using OIDC, you know, whatever it is, that is not helped or fixed by this problem. You know, and in that case, you should be able to. I mean, it's a little bit of a catch-22 depending on what your secrets provider is, but you should be able to use one secrets provider to provide credentials to like a different provider. Like you should be able to do that using Terraform resources.
And that's as soon as you actually pulled it up, right? And I started looking at it, like the NetRC more. I figured that is exactly why, right? I read something and wanted it to be applicable to my use case because I saw the same words, so I just had to double check. But yeah, I get it now. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So thanks.
At least here's somebody who thought what I thought, but I guess that was not the case.
I only know that I've tried it in the past, for a private module registry. Like, that was the idea behind it. So, and it never worked, but so when I saw that it worked, no, or that it was announced, I was like, oh, that's finally cool. I'm glad to get there.
So that's a perfect segue into HashiCorp now being officially part of IBM. So it was hung up the deal for a little while in antitrust, making sure that it didn't create a monopoly for IBM, I guess. That didn't go anywhere, and the deal has closed. So congrats to the employees at HashiCorp. Now I'm just hoping that. We definitely knew what the course of history was for BSL licensed Terraform under HashiCorp by itself. Now I'm really just hoping that there's a new course for it that is going to be beneficial, you know, to the community that was built around it. I'm not sure what that means for OpenTofu and BSL Terraform, but you know, if anybody remembers the whole brouhaha with IOJS and Node.js and how the projects forked for a necessary amount of time for agendas to run their course, then they came back together. And I think it was for the good of the internet, if you will. And I'm hoping that a union or, you know, remarriage is possible in the future. Just putting that out there in the ether, hoping that somebody who knows somebody hears that and these things come together. I don't know. I don't like that there's a rift in the projects and the forks and, you know, can't we just work towards the same goal and outcome? And is it really a threat to Terraform Cloud? I don't think so. So let's all get along. Any other thoughts on what's going on here with the now that this merger is complete?
I'm just
I
going to
think
say it. The only threat to Terraform Cloud is Terraform Cloud.
yeah, well,
And their licensing model, but that's
yeah. But
whatever.
Terraform Cloud, you know, they have done a lot of things nicely now with stacks and you know, ripping off Atom. I'm joking. Doing things to improve the developer experience with Terraform in Terraform Cloud. So you know, I think you know they should be confident in what they've done. It's a good product. Now let us all have Terraform back. All right, next announcement. So I thought this was an interesting write-up. There's been, you know, ever since Amazon came out with its public cloud offering in what, 2006 or so, It set off it created an industry, right, of public cloud providers, and a bunch of secondary ones. And a lot of companies have, invested hundreds of millions and billions of dollars now in public cloud. And that's great for public cloud, but leaves the rest of us still having to deal with very expensive cloud infrastructure. Obviously, there's a lot of benefit. Obviously, we couldn't replicate the same level of SLAs and availability and scalability doing something ourselves. Doesn't reduce the fact that it's expensive. And then it's all priced in USD. Forex is a volatile market, right? Between currencies. And if you are building a product on a, cloud provider predominantly charging its rates in US dollars or similar, that can be a big liability. And this, what I thought it was just interesting. I hadn't heard about this movement, but it made sense. And I think I might even remember the story when it came out of the Nigerian company or startup that ran into this. Excruciating cloud bill. I forget how many hundreds of thousands of dollars it was, which just didn't make sense for the scale of the app and the economy they were in. So this is an example of how Nigeria, there's a market now building for local or domestic cloud providers that cater to the needs of companies in the country, and that includes economically being viable for them and predictable. So in the example here, they explain how the currency depreciated around 70% against the US dollar. So that's, in other words, like saying that your cloud bill went up by 70% and your revenue probably didn't. And there was nothing you could have done personally about it. So they do mention something that Amazon has, allowed more and more foreign currencies to be used in payment, but I don't know what the volatility is of the prices in those currencies if they are pegged to the local economy, or still pegged to the dollar, even though, and the trend, like when you charge your credit card internationally, they're doing the Forex for you. But it's based on the current market value of the dollar.
So I don't know if you were pausing for input on this, Eric, but I have definitely have thoughts on it. It totally makes sense. I feel like for countries on the African continent to build their own data centers or, companies within countries in Africa. And Amazon, they created the industry, but they also created the gap by not building data centers on the African continent. And so I shared in chat a link to their regions and availability zones. They've got one that's in South Africa, so they are present on the continent. But I mean, if you go up, north from South Africa, there's nothing there. And I know, there's difficulties in building in regions that don't have the same support as you might get in North America, Europe, or maybe even South America, Asia, and so on. But if there is a need for folks to use the service there, then somebody's going to fill that need. So I'm glad to see reports like this where countries are like, hey, let's just build our own, run it, quote unquote, in-house, with the house being the country itself. And then we're just going to let, our citizens use this service. So yeah, I mean, it's a problem that Amazon created, but people are going to come together to create the solution for it.
You said something
Eric.
interesting there. I hadn't picked up initially, but were you suggesting it'd be interesting if this was almost a municipal service, cloud access?
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see that where if a country, a government themselves said, hey, we're going to build our own country's data center. If they can, oh, and I, that, but that brings another point that I wanted to add to that. So yeah, a country saying, hey, we're going to build a data center, we're going to set the rates and the services or whatever so that they're beneficial to companies in our country, data, staying in country, not having to worry about, data hosting and that type of stuff, security. So yes, it could be a municipal service in that light. But the one thing that I would be concerned about is investment from foreign countries such as China. They're already investing in development in African countries so that they can exfiltrate the resources back to China. And I mean, I'm not zeroing in on China to be zeroing in on China. There's other countries that do it as well, but they exfiltrate the resources to their country so that they can take advantage of it. You know, they got the trade agreements, they've already invested their own funds into it so that these countries are almost beholden to the investing country to let them do whatever they want to do. So I would hate for a country to be like, hey, we're going to spin up our own cloud. We're going to let our people use it. We need the funds to build it. So let's go to somebody who's going to maybe, hopefully not, take advantage of us, you know?
That
So,
is the risk always, right?
yeah.
Yeah.
My two cents. I'll be quiet now.
No, I was just gonna kind of piggyback on what you were saying, is that I think, like, while a lot of what you said I agree very strongly with, I don't think that pegging this as like an Amazon caused problem is fair, because I think that there are very, very few African countries right now that probably could support the power and internet backbone infrastructure that is necessary in order to host a data center of that, you know, size and scale. You know, we've got many of these countries that you're talking about, like between kind of South Africa and Northern Africa, that are suffering. I mean, today, 2024, 2025, whatever, with political instabilities, the inability to deliver just clean water and sustainable power infrastructure to their population centers, and a bunch of other things. Never mind hosting the next largest, you know, thing that you would need to actually support something like an Amazon data center in one of those, you know, one of those countries, unfortunately. So I see your comment there that you seem to be agreeing. So
Yeah.
I'm not trying to convince you otherwise, but
No. Yeah, I totally get your point. And I did say problem. And I guess by problem, I mean it's the gap, because they are their actions I see are a result of everything that you just said. They're like, hey, we want to build a data center on every single continent on the on Earth, right? Okay, Africa's coming up. What's the most stable place where we can get energy? We can get, you know, people who can run these data centers, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, hey, South Africa looks like a place, so let's drop anchor there. And so they start there. Maybe it comes to years from now where they can, you know, there is stable energy, there are, you know, populations that can support data centers, and, you know, stable governments and so on and so forth throughout the continent. So yes, they, like, we could see regions and availability zones in Africa that look like Europe, that look like the US. You know, but yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. It's not, and I, the problem isn't the problem, it's the gap, I guess, what I'm getting
Yeah.
at. And
No,
it's
I agree. Yeah.
yeah,
With that.
it's we're on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like Amazon are sound business people at the end of the day, right? So it, like they're not going to invest hundreds of millions of
Oh yeah.
dollars to, you know, to a country who is, you know, whose government's being overthrown, you know, every other year in a coup, and you know, their assets could just be seized, right? They don't have
Yes.
any kind of like, guarantees around those kind of things. So I think if you look at like the African continent, unfortunately, it's, you know, it's a sad state of you know, for humanity. But if you look at it and say, how many of those countries have a stable history, their populace is fed and has clean, you know, viable water, and has stable energy, and has a livable wage where they're building businesses that could survive, you know, on in you know, the digital era, on a on anyone's cloud. It's a very short list of countries in, you know, in Africa, unfortunately, right now, that meet that criteria. So I think we need to figure out, you know, we collectively, humanity, need to figure out how to fix that problem before like anyone is going to invest those kinds of resources into one of the countries that is not, you know, rock solidly stable right now.
Yep, no, totally agree. They got bigger problems to solve in a lot of places.
Nigeria, Ghana could probably be the first couple countries to, get that thing solved.
So that is interesting, though. They do have local zones
Yeah.
in these different. I was going to say
Yeah.
that sounds like the first step is get a local zone with a subset of the popular services in some of those more of those
Right.
countries, and then expand from there.
I think that's the only one, though, right? Like
Nigeria,
Lagos, yeah.
yeah. So it is interesting segue for me. We talked about power, for example, as one of the considerations where they have to that they have to establish before opening up a data center. So I live in Houston now. I'm from Los Angeles originally, and don't have too much to talk about with people here in Houston, based on what I do in tech. But the industry here is energy, and all types of energy, including nuclear, alternative forms of energy, and so forth. Somebody was telling me how like now that's becoming one of the biggest problems for building data centers here in the U.S. is we struggle to have enough power and uplinks to build the types of data centers that we want now for AI and so forth. So. The real players who can afford this now are looking at building just their own power grids as well. So they aren't beholden on municipal power grids to power the data centers. I thought that was interesting that there's I had never even thought of that there's this now a potentially budding industry of private energy. And how to build that for data centers. And data centers, they can't use alternative forms of energy because they need constant load, constant power at all times of day. And they can't build batteries large enough to store that amount of energy for these data centers.
Yeah, and I think we had that announcement a little while back about
Yeah, Enbridge.
Talon, who is the operator of a nuclear power plant in I think it's Pennsylvania, and they sold like a giant plot next to it for AWS to build a data center, and they're going to sell them. Yeah, there you go. They're going to sell them power off of the nuclear power reactor for the data center itself.
And that was exclusively, right? They got like exclusivity on the power from.
I think for a certain capacity, yeah,
Okay.
I think it's there. Like
Hmm.
they've dedicated some dedicated size of power to the data center off of their thing. So some part of it will go to the grid and some dedicated capacity goes to the data center. But having your delivery, your generation, like your power generation that close to the data center is actually like is really good because there's a lot that can go wrong in the delivery infrastructure. So that's huge. But then you also have the your data center is sitting next to your nuclear power plant, issue too, where,
Yeah.
things don't go wrong that often with them, but when they do go wrong, they usually go really wrong, unfortunately. So that's, one of those things. But that's a, 960 megawatts is gigantic. That's a ton of power.
Yeah. And interesting coincidence, Talon is based here in Houston, so. Comes full circle.
And I believe that AWS has some sort of like specialization for power and energy. They have like some packaged solutions they've built for like all these power and energy companies where I think they have I can't keep all these things straight, but whatever the you can buy like an Amazon data center that they drop on location for you to do a lot of things. I think they sell a lot of those to the power and energy industry for their like offshore drilling rigs and like operations and like power generation plants and all that kind of thing. So I bet there's some sort of like they probably have a long-standing relationship with a lot of these companies.
that what I saw? It was AWS for energy and utilities.
There you go. Yeah, that's what it.
Interesting.
So they have a lot of like prepackaged solutions for like for certain industries, and that's one of them.
Interesting.
And I think that they even have, yeah, I was gonna say, I think they even have like a whole bunch of like business intelligence solutions for those industries as well to help them like identify the best places to drill for, for oil and natural gas things and, a bunch of other stuff to reduce their costs. So if you look at all the partners that they have in there, they've got a lot of those.
So let's see. Next announcement I had was this is old news for those of you following everything going on in crypto. This was new news for me this week. I didn't hear about this crazy huge attack against Bybit, which is one of the popular Bitcoin exchanges. The hackers got away with 1.5 billion worth of ETH of Ethereum as a result of this. They're tracking this and how it quickly proliferated across lots of wallets and so forth. I think they've only been able to seize like 40 million or something in some way out of that. But for all of you doing hardcore crypto, I you are brave souls. Then again, I'm opening up some accounts here in the US and I can't even get some bank accounts opened up. Wire transfers take 3 weeks, so that's pretty backwards too.
Yeah, the banking industry is definitely one of the most inefficient industries that I've dealt with, especially in the US.
Yeah.
It's crazy how their infrastructure and settlement processes are built.
Yeah, sometimes just when I think it's getting better, I go, oh, okay, we don't have those problems anymore. It's really easy. We can do same day transfers with Zelle, right? Yeah. But thing I just ran into is like Chase, they don't allow ACH transfers to any investment account anymore. They just block it. Isn't that a step backwards at this point? So now I'm trying to figure out how to get money to a brokerage. Anyways. What was I gonna say? Next announcement was, oh, I with this a hack. Anyone know what the attack vector was? I don't recall right now. Last one was probably a welcome enhancement for anyone doing a lot of Lambda development. Amazon has finally added the ability to stream the logs live out of your Lambdas. That should make it a lot easier to understand what's going on. This you can get integrated together with your IDE, like VS Code, by installing the plugin that they have for it. And that's all I got. Chat.
I threw one in chat just now. OpenBao released 2.2.0, and the notable thing for me was they added in the web UI. So that's been disabled for a while. So I haven't tried it yet, but pretty excited to kick the tires on it.
Very cool. What's the overall I have not been following OpenBao. For everyone who's not familiar, this is the fork of HashiCorp Vault, and similar to OpenTofu being the fork of HashiCorp Terraform. Incidentally, OpenBao, one of the biggest sponsors of this fork, was IBM. So I'm really curious if that's continued to be the case, and if there's been any updates on what's going on with OpenBao overall.
I've been following it pretty closely, either in their, they have like a some chat room. It's not Slack, but they've got like a community group, and then they've got their some posts that they've made. It seems like GitLab is a pretty big user from what I've read. That's like the main, like the biggest enterprise one that I can think of. I don't, and they, yeah, they seem to have steady contributors. There's definitely one individual that I'm drawing a blank on in terms of the name, that's been at it since day one, and they're pretty responsive. But yeah, I think, yeah, I don't know to what extent people have been using it because the web UI hasn't been there for a while, if they've just been compiling it. Yep, Alex, that's the guy. But yeah, I think he's like one of the main contributors on this project. I usually see him quite active in the chat room as well as on issues and everything. And then I think they've gutted out all, some of the storage backends as part of this change. So not sure if that's good or bad, but they support, I believe, the default like Raft, like file system based storage, and then they support Postgres. Whereas I think if you're using
They don't
Chunkle,
support S3 anymore.
yeah, so S3, I think, yeah, I don't know if they support all the Vault plugins. So I think S3 was a third-party plugin for Vault. So it wasn't officially supported by HashiCorp, but it was like you still see it on the HashiCorp Vault website. But I don't think they have that. I don't know if they have that plugin functionality like the traditional HashiCorp Vault did. But our use case has been primarily as a key value store. So KV2 secrets, and it's worked out pretty well for us, at least on traditional Vault.
All right. Well, and you're using Postgres as the back end, or?
No, we're using Raft local file system storage and then just taking backups using the Raft snapshot. Are you guys using Vault, or you guys are primarily using Secrets Manager, right?
Just, yeah, whatever a cloud provider offers. It was just, yeah, our stack grew too tall and things we were trying to deliver. So we kind of pulled back on pushing Vault as one of the things that you had to manage in addition to everything else.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Obviously, a lot of nice things happen if you have Vault in place, but it is yet another thing to manage.
Yeah, 100%.
Although the one thing I will say about that, and we've had some conversations recently, Eric, about how many services that you have end up being like the architecture of them ends up being highly influenced by what the underlying cloud provider provides or how their services are architected if you want to take advantage of those. So like on one hand, you don't have to run another platform, but on another hand, you're completely beholden to how AWS runs Secrets Manager. So like you no longer have like a central place. You have a central place in each account in each region that you can store secrets, and you have to either use like some sort of form of replication or do RAM share or some they have some partial solutions for high availability, but like a lot of these things just aren't native out of the box that you get that are really nice in Vault, like spin up nodes in a couple of different places in Vault, and you now have like high availability across multiple regions, and now everyone can use those things, and it's much easier. So I don't know. I keep weighing those two things and.
Well, everything's like, at a certain scale, certain things make sense. At a certain scale within AWS, you're across enough regions, maybe. Okay, great. Or at a certain scale, you're in enough clouds, even though maybe not as much many regions, then still makes sense, right? So there's.
Yeah, I think that functionality that you're describing, Matt, to go across regions easily in Vault, I think that was behind Enterprise. So I don't think that was like in the open source version. I might be mistaken. I think
That
HCI in
is
open
true.
source is literally, yeah, it's just non-existent in open source, actually. It's only enterprise feature for HCI. So you can run it clustered, and then the Raft election occurs, and then it does a failover, but you only have one active reader and writer. Whereas I think with enterprise, you can have multiple, which I'm not entirely sure how that
Yeah.
works. It somehow works.
Yeah. Yeah, you
But I
can't.
think
Well, the Raft protocol is the thing that ends up doing the arbitration between rights and all of that kind of thing. But my whole point though is that there are many things that like if you take advantage of the service as it exists in the cloud provider, you have to be beholden to however the cloud provider architected it. And when you put a solution on top of the cloud provider, you often get more flexibility with how it is deployed, and how you can manage it and a bunch of other things. But that comes obviously with the trade-off of having to manage one more thing on top of it, as Eric was pointing out. So I was just taking that opportunity to go off on a slight tangent because we were talking about like using SSM parameter store as an example and how it's localized to an account and like to an account and a region. And I was saying how wouldn't it be great if there were like SSM parameter store for your AWS organization, and then like under the hood AWS made it like highly available somehow, like for you, and you could just point at a single place and read and write parameters like for everything. And I was just using that as one example, but there are many things that would be nice if you could do that.
Going down a path right now with my team where we have been trying to avoid the vendor lock-in of like AWS, GCP, or Azure. What the biggest thing that hurts is not being able to take advantage of things like STS credentials that you get, like the rotating. Now we have to like come up with policies and build some automation of our own to be able to rotate out keys, and that's it's definitely not as clean as when you use a fully integrated service. And then you might get flexibility in other ways, but then you don't get that IAM STS credentials baked in. At least I don't think you get it if you run both, even with enterprise. I don't know if you get that when you're having it integrated with AWS, but that's definitely one really big annoyance is just the credential management of these third-party tools with the native cloud provider features. Oh, cool. Thanks, Zach. I wasn't across that.
Yeah, I've had a little too much experience with Vault. So, yeah, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I don't know. It's a deep platform. It seems so easy on the surface, but when you really start digging into it and trying to offer it to other teams in a way that's consumable, it's layer upon layer upon layer, and you're basically creating an API. Because it's an additive API. Each part you include adds another path that has to be managed and understood as in part of, as part of the whole. And then identity, if you don't have strong identity in your environments, it can be challenging to say the least. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't purport to be a Vault expert at all, but I thought I recalled that this once was an enterprise feature, but they moved it back into open source at some point because people found it like extremely useful, the HA part. But I wasn't confident enough in my recollection to to make that statement.
Yeah, I thought it was just for performance clusters. Even I could be off on that, but it definitely the standard HA features. I'm not entirely sure. The enterprise features that stick out most to me are like namespaces and things like that that I would highly recommend against ever using anyway. So, because everyone uses the term namespaces, it's overloaded all over the place. So, yeah.
I also think like the auto unlock feature, I think at one
That's another
point
one.
was one that was enterprise and they moved it back into like open source at one point. Or auto unseal, is that what it's called in the thing?
You need to have like a KMS of some sort to do that, or you can have another Vault cluster, because if you you can't solve your problems with Vault, more Vault is the answer. So kind
Yeah.
It's very meta.
of like violence, so.
All right, we are out of announcements. Anybody have any interesting questions we can discuss today?
If no one has anything there, I was wondering if anyone else has seen or kicked the tires on the OpenAI operator.
No, what is
No?
it? Kubernetes
You think
operator?
we're rich or
No,
something? Come on.
no. I'm the first to admit that I've wasted more money in my entire life trying out cool things than anything. But Operator essentially has its own web
Oh,
browser,
I did see.
so it can perform autonomous tasks for you. It is only available with the $200 a month pro subscription for OpenAI. But I will admit that I paid it for a month to try it to see like how this worked. Because if the realization of what this does comes to fruition, you can make way more than $200 a month using it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely worthwhile. But like, it's really cool what you can get it to do. It basically becomes like, it has its own web browser, but inside its own web browser, you can log into all the services that you use, and you can basically get it to do like a number of things for you. So like the other day, I wanted a piece of equipment for my aquarium, like that I was looking for a Neptune Systems controller, and I literally tried having the agent go to Facebook Marketplace, find all the listings, and negotiate with each of the people that were selling it to see who would sell it to me the lowest, and then tell me who would sell it to me the lowest, and I just went in and bought something, and it actually worked.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. Like I watched the thing and I was just sitting there in like amazement.
Wow.
Like how little they
That's
work.
pretty. Yeah, I gotta try that out. Don't we have Pro iCloud?
No, we have Plus. Pro is $200 a month per person.
Per person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So, but
It would
to my
be.
point, I probably saved like 80 or $90 in that one transaction, like for the thing I was buying. And if you did this at scale, like, imagine you wanted to get into a business where you sell these aquarium pieces. Like you'd be like, go find me all the people who are selling this piece of equipment for at least 20% below what I could sell it for on eBay. And
Yeah.
it could go do the research for you and find those things,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
negotiate
Find
all
the
the sales,
arbitrage, basically.
arbitrage, and be like, now and then list it on eBay for me. And if you could do get those working quickly enough, you could actually get like, auto fulfillment where you could just tell the end person that you bought it for to ship it to the person who's
Yeah.
gonna the ultimate like end buyer, and you could easily make like a lot of money with that. So I was trying out like kicking the tires on a bunch of these like a bunch of these ideas on some things, and
I never thought of
yeah.
AI for arbitrage.
Yeah. It could be really, really, really good.
Just wanted to throw that out that it sounds similar to what RabbitR1 is trying to do with Cookie Jar. Just not as technical.
Rabbit R1 cookie. The names of these things are out of control.
Yeah, so it's literally just them taking cookies out of your browser to imitate it to do various tasks.
Got it. Got it. Got it.
Haven't tried it, but yeah, they're trying to do something similar with their handheld. So it's talk to a handheld device that has a camera on it and just describe things, and I don't know. It sounds interesting. I would imagine somebody's out there has already reviewed it.
I want to say wasn't Cookie Jar like an EJB thing, like Enterprise Java Beans, when you actually needed to like store cookies on people's browsers? I think something I seem to remember that in some sort of like Java-based web development servlets or whatever back in the day. One of those things had something called the Cookie Jar, I'm pretty sure. So that's
It's
kind of
not ringing
funny.
a bell, but believable.
Yeah.
It's just what a term. Leave it to tech companies to pick an overloaded term and run with it.
Interesting. All right. Any other cool stuff? Feed me more.